the Christian Patriot. We will be looking at Psalm 2 later on. And because it's a subject that requires some history, we're going to look at history first. We're going to look at some American history. Tomorrow is Memorial Day. Keep in mind that because it is Memorial Day tomorrow, that we need to think about those who have died for our country. We need to keep in mind that we're a free people because others were willing to die, others were willing to fight, and they shed their blood so that we can be free. And that's a very small picture of what Christ has done for us. He shed his blood so that we can be free, so that we can have eternal life and not experience the wrath of God. In all of this, the country we live in, the wars we've fought, the hardships we've had, the triumphs we've had as a nation, the struggles we've had as individuals, as Christians, and the triumphs, these are all by the hand of God. It's called the providence of God. And that's something our founding fathers were aware of and spoke about, but it's something you don't hear a lot of today in Christian circles. Think about Memorial Day tomorrow, because we are a nation at war. And when you pray, make sure you say a prayer for our men and women in uniform. Okay, some of them are saved, but some of them are not. And we can pray that God will change their hearts and save many of them. And some of them are out there fighting on the field. They're fighting an enemy that hates us. And they hate all that we hold to be true and good in the West. And if that enemy could, they would kill you and your children. So keep that in mind as you say your prayers. I have some quotes from George Washington to you. It's not an outline, but it's some quotes, and they give you some time to look at them later on if you'd like. I'm going to try to read through them, but it's kind of difficult going through a whole lot of quotes. Okay, like I said, the title of the sermon is The Christian Patriot, which means that someone who does love their country and who is a Christian. And I have had the subject on my mind for quite a while. And it started when I looked at the book 1776 by David McCullough. And it got me so turned on to history that I've been binging. I've been on a history binge ever since. And when time permits, I still get to go and read a book on history. And it's just something that I don't think I will tire of. It's a very good subject for us to study as a people. Far too often, us as Americans do not understand our history, and we're actually told a lot of nonsense that passes for history, unfortunately. Anyway, I am amazed at the history I did not know. There's so much detail involved, and if you study history from a Christian perspective, you'll see the hand of God. George Washington recognized this. Now, in studying our U.S. history, in fact, if you look at the United States and our people in it, we probably can see that there have been people who had such a great love for this country that they have turned it into a religion. And then there are those who have turned their back on the nation that gave birth to them, that gave them such great opportunities. But I was wondering in my studies, what is it that a Christian should do? What can a Christian do? I mean, can you love your country and still be a Christian? Well, in the United States, we have freedom, prosperity, and we have a government that more or less reflects the citizenry. In fact, you know that we have many opportunities here. And our nation has served as an example and may still serve as an example in the future for other nations to emulate. And ideally, the people can look on the people from the earth can look upon the United States as a beacon to show them a better civil order with freedom of religion. I mean, if you look across the world, you don't see a lot of that. Freedom of speech, you don't see a lot of that either. Free commerce and representative government and the rule of law. Now, are these found in perfection in our country? No, not by far. As a matter of fact, we can look at things and think, hey, things aren't going so good. Okay, but when one is born or is naturalized a United States citizen, then they inherit all of what it means to be an American. All that is ours, our history, our language, our liberties, our status as a citizen is all theirs. We have a great heritage given to us by God. And so the Christian patriot ought to learn about history. And so what is our heritage? What is our foundation? What is it that is the foundation of the United States of America? You know, where do we come from? What informed the people who gave us we the people? It has been erroneously taught that the move to liberty on the part of the colonists was due to the desire to have civil freedoms. We've all heard the quote, no taxation without representation. It is true, and the colonies did not want to be called controlled by Britain, but they thought themselves capable of self-rule. And if Britain, and this is what some of the people have said back in that time, if Britain had respected the colonists, things may have been different. But there's also another motive, a very strong one, and that is a motive on the part of many, and that motive was religion. There was a motive for freedom that was rooted in religion. If you think about it, many of the states had state religions. People were taxed to support a religion they did not believe in or hold to, denomination. Many of our founding fathers were not all Christians. How many of you have heard that basically they're all deists or secularists or something nonsensical like that? Okay. Well, whatever they were, they viewed our founding, the founding of the United States, as providential, and that the United States was formed by God and blessed for a purpose. Before there even was a nation, people were having the feeling that America was destined for greatness. We are often told the United States was not Christian but deist, not just the founding fathers, but the people themselves. Well, the people themselves are really all over the place, but by and large, they were Christian. Okay, we have been also told that religion didn't matter. And how many of you have sat in a history class or read a history book by someone with an anti-Christian or anti-capitalist bias? Put your hand up if you have. Okay, quite a few. Now, these citizens, and yes, there are citizens who write books like that. Now, I'm not saying that we all have to be my country right or wrong, it's all perfect and everything, but these citizens seek to minimize the strength and power of the United States. They seek to dilute what it means to be an American. The uniqueness of what it means to be a citizen of the United States does not truly impact their thinking. They don't care about the history of, and I quote, dead old white men. They don't care about that, they say. Well, I personally take the contrary view. How many of you heard that phrase, dead old white men? I see some consternation on your faces. Yeah, a bulletin from one of the teachers' unions of this state had some articles in there, and they were saying, we don't care about history of dead old white men. We don't care about literature from them. So anyway, I don't want to avoid the truth, because I have read books where people are saying that this is a Christian nation right now, and that it's everybody was a Christian back then, and things like that. It's kind of an exaggeration. It's best to be truthful and honest in your observation of history, okay? Because remember that if you study history, it helps you understand what you have today. So, again, I ask, what is our foundation? Now, I can argue that our foundation comes directly from Christ, that it's based on Christ. If you study the history, it goes all the way through the Reformers. I'm skipping a lot of things, a lot of people. It goes through the Reformation and to our soil. And it's on our soil where we have the Virginia Charter, 1606. It says there that it states that one of the reasons for establishing the colony was to propagate the Christian religion to such people as yet live in darkness and a miserable ignorance of the true knowledge and worship of God. So it says in there that one of the purposes of that colony is to propagate the Christian religion to such people as yet live in darkness and miserable ignorance of the true knowledge and worship of God. In the Mayflower Compact, in which for the glory of God and the advancements of the Christian faith and honor of our king and country, They said that just and equal laws for the common good was declared. These are the earliest documents that we have for our continent here. Since these two documents, the people that eventually became a great nation has had an eye on God. The love and ardor would diminish and grow, but there is no mistaking that the people, by and large, knew of the God of the Bible, either as true sons of God or as those influenced by Christianity. Now, eventually, there came to be 13 colonies. And I didn't know this until I started preparing for the sermon, but Georgia was like the last. And it became a place where the debtors went, those people who had failed businesses went, and that's about it. Okay. It's better than that now, okay, but that's how it started out. Now, the colonies were not identical. It was not one uniform group. In fact, they were often at odds with each other. They were not unified. And so they were having some issues. And after the Puritans, the next few generations, things kind of changed. And then there was something that came and it unified the colonies. It was known as the Great Awakening. There were two men of God that were used to be ministers to the Americans. These were Jonathan Edwards. We all know about him. He preached this famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. And thus a revival in New England began. But then also there was George Whitefield. He was an Anglican minister. He came to America from the British Isles, and he was preaching the doctrines of grace. He traveled north and south, preaching even in the outdoors, as the established churches were somewhat hostile to him. I mean, at first they welcomed him, and then they said, hey, you're getting to be too popular, so we don't want you preaching in our pulpits. Anyway, in a biography by the Mansfield, I think his name is. I didn't write it down here, but in the biography of George Whitefield, it was entitled The Forgotten Founding Father. He's often included as a founding father before the Revolutionary War because what he did was instrumental in uniting the colonies in a spiritual way. As a matter of fact, Benjamin Franklin was a friend and acquaintance of his. And a story goes something like this. There's a story in newspapers that said that George Whitefield had preached to 25,000 people, or Benjamin Franklin didn't quite believe that. So he was on the outskirts of the crowd. He was at a sermon of Whitefield's, and Whitefield's voice was so robust that Franklin decided to walk away until he could not hear him preach. So he was calculating approximately how many people, he was actually doing a crowd count, how many people could possibly hear Whitefield preach. And he estimated that it was about 30,000 people could possibly hear him preach. This is out in the open air. Okay. And so he then believed the newspaper account. Here's what Benjamin Franklin said of George Whitefield. Now, this is not the whole thing. There's several pages in Franklin's autobiography. It goes like this. In 1739, arrived among us from Ireland the Reverend Mr. Whitefield, who has made himself remarkable there as an itinerant preacher. The multitudes of all sects and denominations that attended his sermons were enormous. It was wonderful to see the change soon made in the manners of our inhabitants. From being indifferent about religion, it seemed as if all the world were growing religious, so that one could not walk through the town in the evening without hearing psalms sung in different families of every street. Did you hear that? They went from being indifferent about religion, and remember when they talk about religion, they mean the Christian religion or the various sects and denominations from it. It seems as if all the world were growing religious, so that one could not walk through the town in the evening without hearing psalms sung in different families of every street. How would you like to do that here? Walk down the street and hear people singing psalms. Now, George Whitefield preached solid doctrine. Okay? I actually have a copy of one of his sermons. I was going to read it to you. It's very long. Try to get copies of his sermons. They're great. He did not pull any punches. He preached the doctrines of grace full on. I also found out that there was a movement of churches, a movement in that churches would set up new churches. There would be a lot of church planting going on in the colonies. Okay, each would have their different, each area of America would have their different flavor, if you will. In New England, you had certain kinds of churches. In the mid-Atlantic states, you have another kind. And in the South, you had the Baptists. Okay, so each, the churches were starting to build more churches. And they had the attitude that went something like this. If you will build them, they will come. That's the attitude they had. Build the churches and you will fill them. Okay. Before the Revolutionary War, Christians founded universities to supply educated ministers of the gospel to the people. See if you can recognize some of their names. Harvard. The College of William and Mary. Yale. Princeton, Rutgers. Have you heard those names before? Yeah, I hope so. Okay. But do you think those universities are functioning according to their original purposes? Okay. How many of you have heard of George Washington? Yeah, that's a dumb question, I know, but that's me. Okay. George Washington is known, of course, as the father of our country. And in no small way, he was used by God to participate in forming our nation. I mean, we all know that. That's in our history. In the French and Indian War, did you know that he was a target? He was an officer, and the Indians who were working with the French were trying to shoot him. They shot some horses out from under him. They shot at him. They struck his coat. But God spared him. In fact, the story goes that one of the Indian chiefs said, "We knew he was destined for greatness because we couldn't kill him." Now, George Washington was later made commander-in-chief by the Continental Congress to take charge of an army. If you looked at the history, you knew that the army was not really an army. It was nothing more than state militias and volunteers. They had little or no discipline. They had little or no training, no cohesion, and no equipment. Imagine taking charge of an army like that that's going up against the greatest army in the known world at that time, against Great Britain. He was also the first president of our Constitution, and already asked a question about some of the founding fathers about being deists. So was Washington a deist or was he a Christian? Okay, some have said yes. Well, to which question? Some have said yes to each question. Depends on which group you're listening to. But God truly knows, and for the Christian patriot, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, like I said earlier, the truth does matter. Okay, but we cannot know for sure. And so you can ask this question, though. Did Washington think religion important to our nation? And now you can look at your copies. General Orders, June 28, 1777. All chaplains are to perform divine services tomorrow and on every succeeding Sunday with their respective brigades and regiments where the situation will possibly admit it. And the commanding officers of corps are to see that they attend, themselves with officers of all ranks setting the example. The commander-in-chief expects an exact compliance with this order, and that it be observed in the future as an invariable rule of practice. And every neglect will be considered not only a breach of orders, but a disregard to decency, virtue, and religion. General Orders, May 2nd, 1778. While we are zealously performing the duties of good citizens and soldiers, we certainly ought not to be inattentive to the higher duties of religion. Listen carefully to this one. To the distinguished character of patriot, it should be our highest glory to add the more distinguished character of Christian. The signal instances of providential goodness which we have experienced and which have now almost crowned our labors with complete success demand from us, in a particular manner, the warmest returns of gratitude and piety to the supreme author of all good. I don't know if you know this, by 1778, George Washington had been witness of several what we might consider miracles. but definitely providential handiwork of God in saving his army. It's just amazing at how many things have happened. Here's a speech to the Delaware Chiefs, May 22nd, 1779. This is an excerpt from it. "You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are." The circular to the states of 1783, this is June 8th. "I now make it my earnest prayer that God would have you and the state over which you preside in his holy protection, that he would incline the hearts of the citizens to cultivate a spirit of subordination and obedience to government, to entertain a brotherly affection and love for one another, for their fellow citizens of the United States at large, and particularly for their brethren who have served in the field, and finally, that he would most graciously be pleased to dispose us all to do justice, to love mercy, and to demean ourselves with that charity, humility, and pacific temper of mind, which were the characteristics of the divine author of our blessed religion. And without an humble invitation of whose example in these things, we can never hope to be a happy nation." An excerpt from Washington's first inaugural address. "No people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than the people of the United States. Every step by which they have advanced to the character of an independent nation seems to have been distinguished by some token of providential agency." And so many of the founding fathers, though not all Christians, believed that our republic cannot survive without religion, morals, piety, and virtue. By the way, religion, and I mentioned this before, but I'm reemphasizing it, religion meant the Christian religion in all of its shades, sects, and denominations. Keeping in mind, though, that not all were orthodox in their doctrine. Here's some more. Here's what John Adams said. "Our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people." Thomas Jefferson. "Religion is, in a quote, deemed incompatible with good government and yet proved by our experience to be its best support." Samuel Adams. "While the people are virtuous, they cannot be subdued. But when once they lose their virtue, they will be ready to surrender their liberties to the first external or internal invader." In the book, The Patriot's History of the United States by Swikart, I think that's the last quote that I have in the handout. It goes without saying, of course, that most of these men were steeped in the traditions and teachings of Christianity. Almost half the signers of the Declaration of Independence had some form of seminary training or degree. John Adams claimed that the Revolution connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. John's cousin Sam, that is Samuel Adams, cited passages of the Declaration as the day that the colonists restored the sovereign to whom alone men ought to be obedient. In short, any reading of the American Revolution from a purely secular viewpoint ignores a fundamental Christian component of the revolutionary ideology. Contrast that with what we have now. The argument can be made that some of our freedoms have been eroded. I mean, how many of you think possibly that could be the case? And that our government does not have our best interest of our citizens at heart. Or maybe it's just unresponsive to the United States citizen. Yes, we do have problems in this country. In fact, if you look around outside, you can find them. We have the gay marriage push. We have illegal immigration. We have government spending. Government's supposed to spend, but not like what our government is doing. We are a debtor nation. There was a time when we were a creditor nation, but now we are a debtor nation. Our sovereignty is challenged both within and without. Jihad has been declared upon us. And the rule of law is not upheld by our own government. And what about the churches? The churches, by and large, seem to be weak in their doctrine, weak in their influence. So we do suffer from many problems, and some of these may actually be very detrimental to us. But if we try to address each one, just try to tackle one problem at a time, which is often wise, it's almost like stretching a Band-Aid on each problem, because there is a root cause, and that root cause has to deal with sin. I mean, if you really take a look at it, the farther we get from Christian influence, how well are we going to behave as a nation? Please take out your Bibles. Psalm 2. Why do the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bonds in pieces and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision, and he shall speak to them in his wrath and distress them in his deep displeasure. Yet I have set my king on my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord has said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will give you the nations for your inheritance, and the ends of the earth for your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore be wise, O kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in the way, when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all those who put their trust in him. If you take a look at Psalm 2, this is an Old Testament discussion of Christ and the Father. Christ is sitting on his throne. He's sitting on his throne right now. And notice that the nations rage and the people plot a vain thing. Do you think the nations like to have restraint put upon them? The peoples like to have restraint put on them by God? No. Before many of us were saved, we didn't like that. We want no restraints, no hindrances. But what the nations do, does that disturb God? No, he laughs at them because he knows that he's in charge. We know that. Okay. Christ is ruling. He is ruling the nations right now. It says, you will break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. And now, verse 10. Now therefore be wise, O kings, and be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all those who put their trust in him. Now if you think about it, if you think about what this is picturing, the nations are trying to throw off the yoke of the Son, throw off the restraint, throw off the rule of law. Throw off all that God has put upon us to do. Now, I don't know about you, but I do not want to see our country join those ranks. Does God discipline nations? We have examples in the Bible. Yes, he does. When bad things happen to our country, does that mean he's disciplining us? Some people say yes, and some people say, oh, no, that's just the breaks. But God does discipline nations as he disciplines people. We heard today about Jonah in Nineveh. He warned them. So I don't want to see our country join the ranks of those who are plotting and raging against the Lord. In fact, I want all my descendants to live in a free nation. I want my descendants to live in a nation of freedom, individual liberties, bounty, and Christian influence. And when I look at our rich history, I think that this nation is worth saving for the sake of posterity. If you look at our history, if you look at the history of other empires, our nation is unique. Other empires seek to dominate and rule. And yes, we have made mistakes in the past, but that's not necessarily what the people want. So I think this nation is worth saving. I have children, and I hope by God's grace, I'll have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I would like them to live in freedom. I would like them to have freedom of religion, freedom of speech. In fact, I want them all saved above all. I don't know about you, but do you guys agree that our nation is worth saving? If you think about it, think about all the blessings that you have. They come from the hand of God, including being born in this country. John Quincy Adams, talking about posterity, John Quincy Adams, he was the son of John Adams, said, and he's directing this directly to posterity, which is us and our children and grandchildren. You will never know how much it has cost my generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. So then what is the Christian patriot to do? Okay, how do we make good use of it? Well, I have a few points, four of them. Okay, first of all, we need to know our heritage. Know your heritage. The lesser heritage is the American heritage. But the greater heritage, remember I said it's for a Christian patriot, you are Christian. The greater heritage is Christian. And as with the United States citizen who is ignorant of his heritage, as that person is in a sorry state, how much more so is the Christian who is ignorant about their heritage in Christ? So you got to know your heritage. Number two, learn about and understand providence. You know, it's a shame that the deists of the past knew more about providence than God's people know now. And I mentioned that earlier. Now, in this church, we don't have a problem with providence. In fact, we understand it pretty well. Okay? But step outside those doors, go to other churches, and what do you hear? It's all up to us. Okay? We are the captains of our own destiny, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, it's really not talked about much in Christian circles. If you mention the word providence, they're going to look at you like you said a foreign word. Remember that all things come from the hand of God, the good and the bad. No, we might consider them bad, but they're for our own good in the long run, according to Romans 8. Number three, influence. You need to influence those around you. Start with your family. Okay, start with people around you. I'm surprised. I was reading the history, I noticed that one man, one woman, one person can make a difference. And if you take one of those people who made a difference in the founding of our nation out of the picture, I wonder how we would have fared then. But one person can make a difference. Number four, be about the Lord's work. Work to spread the gospel. This should be your first concern. If you take a look at history, those who were Christians were concerned foremost, not with forming a nation, but with spreading the word of God. You know, God gave us strengths and weaknesses for his glory. He gave us tasks to do. Okay? He gave us good works to do. And some of that is preaching his word. Some of that is supporting missions. Some of that is being the best teacher you can be. Some of that is being the best janitor you can be. Some of it is being the best whatever you are. In other words, do all that you do as if you're doing it for the Lord. Now, in closing, I want to leave you with another quote. This is from Ezra Stiles, who later became the president of Yale. Remember I mentioned that before? It was formed as a university to prepare pastors for teaching people the Word of God. Anyway, Ezra Stiles, he kept a literary diary starting from the early period of the Revolutionary War. And after the battles of Lexington and Concord, he wrote this. The good Lord direct and overrule all for his glory and the good of his chosen. It is happy that the troops have given the first blow. The way is open and clear now for the Americans. It's so odd if you look at the history and what people wrote. There was great tension between various groups. But many of them, look at that first line. The good Lord direct and overrule all for his glory and the good of his chosen. They had a sense of God. They had a sense of his providence. And look at who they were praying for. Look who they were concerned about. The good of his chosen.